especially like that. Have you been up to that Prairie Fire?
I have. Yeah.
I mean, because like malls and just the standard strips are kind of out.
Yeah, yeah, and they're looking so old.
Yeah.
When Prairie Fire, I was just over in Town Center yesterday. You know that what do they call that area where California Pizza Kitchen
yeah.
is,
yeah.
Picasso,
yeah.
and Zadig Kwak. So that's where Orange Theory is, Chop House. Just cool.
That Town Center.
Town Center, right. But it's called something else, that specific little area.
That little strip
yeah,
right there.
Yeah, yeah, off to the north.
I think everything is leaning towards that, and like experiences, the
yeah.
smaller movie theaters.
Yeah, more intimate, kind mm-hmm. of a community setting, yeah. Which is cool, because the strip centers are just ugly.
Yeah.
Even the one on Shawnee, yeah. I was over there yesterday, I was like, man, it just looks so old nowadays.
And you, like the people that are selling stuff are going to have to incorporate experiences and entertainment into it.
That's right.
Because I don't. My wife and I just buy everything on Amazon.
Who does? Like, I know.
That's all we
it's
do.
It's got to be a destination or you're not going to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we were in Lowe's yesterday getting some stuff, and I needed a 15th, 16th socket,
yeah.
right, for this thing on my brush hog.
Yeah.
I was like, crap, I don't want to buy this whole socket set for 40, 50 bucks. This is like, hop on Amazon.
Yep.
$7, ordered, be here today.
Yep. It's like, Amazon Prime. That's what we do. It's bad because we're like, oh, we need this. She'll get it.
Yeah.
And there's like specific, especially with her going through the pregnancy and now postpartum stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Just anything specific. She gets on there.
Yeah.
Orders
next
the
day.
Exact size.
Yeah.
Next day it's
yeah.
there.
Yeah. Don't have to get up out of your seat.
Yeah.
yeah.
It's cool.
It's good
cool.
stuff.
So I didn't realize, I was reading through your bio, either I forgot or that you're a Mid-American Nazarene grad.
Yeah.
That's where my whole family went.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So it the basketball coach there was my parents. Youth pastor in Iowa.
Unbelievable.
That's the only reason we ended up in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Because they were like best friends. But yeah, my entire family went through there.
There's some good people there, brother. You know, yeah. I went to Pitt State first. I mean, I wasn't,
yeah.
I was a Christian, but not a Christ follower, if you
yeah.
will. You know,
yeah.
went to Pitt State. It's the only place I could
yeah.
afford. Had to put myself through that. And then when I met my wife, I was like, I don't want to be away from her that much. And you know, God kind of led me up here through that business,
mm-hmm.
drive away. And really all orchestrated, there had to be God orchestrated, nothing else makes sense. But then went to Mid-America, changed to business, and had some of the best professors that I'll never forget.
Yeah, yeah. Who was your professors up there?
So Mike Goff.
He was my professor.
He's fantastic,
he's
right? He just retired
guy.
Last year.
Yeah.
Mark Ford.
Okay.
Remember Mark, he was
yeah,
like business
him.
Law.
Yeah.
Dave Wegley.
Yeah.
Young guy. And then and beyond that, I don't remember.
Okay.
I remember like my stats.
I
teacher.
Had those three, Yorton Clark, let's see, Jamie Myrtle, accounting professor. Those might have been new.
Okay.
Yeah.
I had all my accounting, I think, at JUCO before I went.
That's funny. We have pretty much the same similar story.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know where. I was all basketball.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of got burnt out.
Yeah.
And then I went to Emporia State.
Okay.
Just kind of with a buddy.
Okay.
And
first year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely hated it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
God kind of led me towards Mid-American Nazarene.
Yeah.
And then I met my wife.
At
junior
school there.
Year. Yeah.
Okay.
At MNU.
Okay. Yeah. We've got some other good friends that go to Maranatha who we were classmates at Mid-America, didn't know each other then,
yeah.
but they had gone there and met, married, their kids went through Maranatha Academy. So small world up here, man.
Yeah, that's cool. That's
and
cool.
I have encouraged a lot of kids to go through there just because of my experience and some kids that had struggles at KU and whatnot went through there, changed their life.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I mean, you're in a classroom and you have usually each professor's cell phone number.
Yeah, yeah.
And they actually care about you.
They
so
care about you.
That's cool.
Yeah. And they know your name. Man.
So how is, before we get into like what you're doing now with the lawn and landscape
yeah.
side, why don't you give me just a brief summary of your both personal bio and career bio?
Sure. Yeah, pretty simple. I mean, you know, I grew up in a small town out in Basser, Kansas.
Okay.
With a single mom,
okay.
didn't have a whole lot. My dad was a police officer, so never grew up with much. But I just knew I didn't want to go down the government employment path.
Yeah.
So ended up deciding to be an engineer major at Pittsburgh State. So I was one of the first in my family to even go to college, and went down to Pittsburgh for a couple of years studying plastics engineering, doing well. But in the process of that second year, met my what would be my future wife.
Yeah.
And you know, as relationships go, you grow closer, you don't want to be so far away. And Pittsburgh wasn't a real good price setting for me, right? I was a fraternity president and stuff, and
yeah,
it just
yeah.
wasn't probably a good place to be for me. So decided to move up here that summer, and took a job with a trucking company through a friend of mine whose dad had this little mom and pop shop and trucking company, and agreed on $5 an hour wage, which was enough for some gas money.
Yeah.
So did that for the summer. It was going to be a summer job, and I was actually going to head back to Pittsburgh and finish my degree. Yeah. Well, this, I kind of fell in love with this job, per se. It, you know, I was an 18-year-old kid trying to dispatch 50-year-old men, and I kind of started gaining some talents there, and I liked that. And then I got closer to my wife, and I thought, man, I just got to stay here, figure this out. So ended up applying at Mid-American Nazarene College, and they took all my credits from Pitt State, gave me a path to graduate with a business degree in 2 years.
Okay.
And for me, I was like, man, that's a blessing. I can finish my degree in a four-year span. And so went there, stayed working for that trucking company, graduating those 2 years. And when I got my degree, I went back to my boss, as we had talked about, and said, hey, Larry, I've got my degree. I've quadrupled your company.
You had taken him from how many drivers?
Yeah, when I started with him, he had 10 drivers, working out of a single wide trailer behind his farmhouse in Bonner Springs.
Yeah.
10 drivers. By the time I graduated, we had 40 drivers. So quadrupled his company.
Yeah.
I was running the entire company, so I knew what he's making, right?
Yeah.
More money than I thought people made, because I didn't know any better. I was just an ignorant kid that was figuring things out. But I saw the progression of his income, and I thought, man, this guy, you know, he's gonna take great care of me. And great care of me back then would have been like $30,000. I didn't know any better. I just thought, hey, I could maybe buy us a house someday, and we'd be on our way. But I went to him and actually sat across from this guy, and I never saw him much. He was a driver, so he's on the road a lot, but kind of intimidating guy, and I'm young, you know, whatever, at that time, 21-year-old.
Yeah, yeah.
So I sit across from the table, and he writes down kind of a little piece of paper and slides it across the table, kind of like Clark Griswold gets the jelly at the Mutt Club, right? You've seen the movie, so it's great. And you just kind of take it, you puff, and you puff, and, you know, I didn't have that.
So he literally wrote his number for you down on that piece of paper.
Wrote this figure, and I can still see it like it was just yesterday. It said $23,400. Right?
Yeah.
Which is the equivalent of about $11 an hour.
Yeah.
Right? And I think at the time I was probably already making $8, so I think he thought he was really doing me a big favor.
Yeah.
But looking back, Britt, it's probably the best thing that ever happened, because it offended me so much that I thought, you know what? I know how to run this business. I've ran his business and I've grown his business.
Yeah.
I just gotta find the money to start my own.
Wow.
So I went out, you know, on that journey trying to find money, trying to go to banks.
Yeah.
And you know, as you know, a young businessman with no assets, they love your story, they're not gonna take a risk on you. So every bank in town is like, man, great idea, great story, good luck, out the door you go. And so I finally got so desperate, I was like, well, you know, I don't wanna give up on this dream, because I think I can make this happen. Well, because I had gotten my college degree, started getting applications for all these credit cards, right? So I was like, let me sign up for these. So every credit card, you know, would have like a $2,000 limit, but they'd give you $1,000 in cash advance at 26%. I was like, well, I got nothing to lose. I mean, I signed up for probably 25, 30 credit cards. I think I got approved for, man, there's probably 10 of them, 12 of them.
Yeah.
End up taking $26,000 in cash from these credit cards at 26%.
Yeah.
And started this business
with
four drivers, one computer, two bedroom apartment, and a business partner.
Okay.
And we got started. And I was scared to death, but I told my wife.
And now, where did the business partner come in?
So he was a friend of mine at college,
okay.
Right? So I actually went looking for my dad. You know, hey, Dad, you know, you got some money, can you invest? We'll be partners. Oh, son, you know, I can't take that risk. Went to uncles. I didn't have anybody with money in my family.
Yeah.
But really, all they needed is $10,000 or $20,000 to kind of come into the business and go. But you know, it's a risk, and here's this young kid. What does he know?
Yeah.
And
did he bring the same amount of money to the table?
Or? He didn't.
Okay.
Yeah. So he was supposed to.
Yeah.
Right? That was the agreement. We were 50-50 partners. But what I learned through a partnership is if you don't have all that worked out on paper in writing, you usually get disappointed. So he didn't. He didn't bring much to the table. And then, you know, over the course of a few years, I realized he wasn't the same work ethic.
Yeah.
Committed, didn't have the same moral compass as I did, and so, and we'll get into that, but I worked with him for about 12 years, and then eventually was able to get rid of him, but...
And how did that, if you don't mind, practically, how did that look? You bought out his...
No, so what happened is, you know, we worked those 12 years, basically didn't like each other for about 11 and a half of those years, but kind of like a bad marriage, you stay together for the sake of the kids. We were growing a business. We had actually grown it to several million in revenue.
Okay.
That the $26,000 that I had borrowed from credit cards, paid that back in 6 months, right?
Okay.
With all the interest. We were now debt-free, growing the business, hiring employees. So grew that business pretty well. But at the end of that 12 years with my partner, we had just lost our biggest account, yeah. which is weird. And I went to him and said, John, we need to separate, you know, let's work it out. I was going to buy him, mm-hmm. and just the way things kind of turned around and the reputation of our company was kind of going downhill, I decided to sell out to him 100%. So I sold all my equity interest to him, grabbed a check, left, went and bought a building,
okay.
started my own 100% driveway company within 2 months,
okay.
and man, the rest is kind of history.
And so that clean break from him was kind of better for you. Start your own reputation the way you want it.
You got it. And okay. I could do, you know, my own marketing, my own logo, my own identity.
Yeah.
And man, for me, it was like I was on fire again, you know?
And then that's where Team Driveway was born.
That's where Team Driveway was born,
And what year was that?
That was in 2006. So I left him in September of 2006, sold out. By November 2006, had Team Driveway.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I assume you guys were bringing enough revenue before the market dipped a little bit, or were you not affected
by
that?
Well, 2006 was kind of a tough year
in
the industry, in the economy, if you will, but it was also an opportunity.
Yeah.
So because I just sold out and was on fire, man, it just got aggressive, right?
Yeah.
Went to, I came across a really good employee that you know, Scott Shacklett, was recommended to me by a brother-in-law of mine. Brought him on. I was like, Scott, listen, I know the business. I've got the rapport. I've got the reputation. We just need to build this thing. So having that inside, it just took the work to get it done.
Okay.
So we went to work, got aggressive, and then we got some of the biggest customers that are still customers today that first 6 months.
Yep.
And we went from zero to, I think, $5 million revenue within a year.
Wow.
We were cruising.
Wow.
So things were good. Scott was happy. We were growing the business. We had just moved into one of the new buildings that I bought.
Okay.
And, man, away we went.
Okay. And so from there carries all the way to, what, 2015?
2015, yeah. We grew the business. At that point, we had about 300 drivers doing about 25 to 28 million in revenue.
Okay.
And had always had in the back of my mind that I'd like to sell the company eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had received a phone call from this lady from this newspaper called Mergers and Acquisitions, right? She wanted to do a little article on us because she saw all the awards and accolades we were getting and just kind of want to know our secret sauce. So my first question to her was, well, what's this going to cost me, right? Because everybody wants in your pocket. She's like, oh, nothing. We just, you know, it sounds like this great story. We want to hear about it. So I said, fine. And we spent 30 minutes kind of talking through and having a good time, laughing and just sharing some stories. But at the very end of that conversation, she goes, well, Jim, I have to ask you, would you ever be willing to sell your company? And I said, everything's for sale. We hung up. Within about 10-12 days, I was getting emails, phone calls, texts from all these business bankers around the nation. Hey, we've read your story, you know, we'd like to market your company, you know, or are you interested in selling? And it just went crazy. And I just went from someday having a dream to why not check this out? Got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
And ended up interviewing about 20 different business bankers and ended up going with a company out of St. Louis that really offered me the best potential. I didn't think they could get there, but I was like, hey, you know, it's a very low-cost probe. Let's go and let's see what you guys can do. And, you know, I'm not going to pay you along the way, but if you sell it, you'll make out, I'll make out.
Yeah.
And they were, so once I committed to them that year, they sold my business within 6 months to the day.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And sold that in October of 2015.
Okay. And so this all sounds quick, but so from getting into the trucking industry to selling Team Driveway was how long?
Well, like any business, right, it's an overnight success. It just happens to take 20 years to do it. So from the time I started rolling in 1995, sold in 2015, so almost exactly 20 years.
20 years.
Yeah. And it's a flash, and any of us in business know that. It goes by fast.
Yeah.
But if you stick it out through the good times and the bad, make some good decisions, correct your mistakes, we can
It sounds like you brought good people on. I mean, how did you do that, especially right at the beginning, because it sounds easy, and especially in the green industry, it's a little different story.
Sure.
You're dealing
I think in any industry, right? So I think the main thing is you want to hire well.
Yeah.
Like they say, you hire slowly, fire quickly, right? So there were several people I had to let go. I had one person quit me ever in that, at least with team, in that 10 years of team, I had one person quit only because she was moving to Colorado.
Okay.
But we created a culture and an environment that was so healthy and fun, even though it's a stressful business, that people wanted and desired to be there. Okay. So I think what our main probably secret sauce there was is I always told everybody I hired by personality. Mm-hmm. If I'd like to choose a person, I think I can teach you anything, right? We can all learn any skill. But I didn't want to hire a bunch of people with knowledge in trucking with these terrible personalities and try to change them.
Okay.
Because a personality, a person's spots are their spots. Mm-hmm. But if they've got a great personality and they're willing to learn, I think you can make someone great.
You can do a lot with that.
That's right.
That's awesome. That's awesome. What are kind of your biggest learning lessons that you're going to carry with you from that industry over now to Lawn and Landscape?
To Lawn and Landscape, yeah. So, you know, any industry, and I think what I like the parallel between landscape and trucking is it's blue collar, right? Yeah. So you're taking a bunch of people that think all they can do in life is work and die, right? Mm-hmm. But when you can take some people and build a dream and inspire them to be the best they can be, I think that's what I'll carry over, because to me, it's not about the money and the success. That all comes. But if you build a good foundation, a good culture, you take good care of people, you inspire them and bring out the best in others, it's a win-win. I mean, it's great for the owner, the proprietor, and it's great for the receiver. And so that is what I'll take over, is just building that great culture, not pushing everybody to their limit, but allowing everybody to reach that limit that they want to reach.
Yeah. That's awesome. And then I'll also have you touch on, a lot of our listeners are just starting a business, mm-hmm. or they're kind of 20 to 30 years old, found themselves in lawn care. I think there's a lot of misconceptions. Kind of entrepreneurship is cool.
Yeah.
Business ownership is cool right now. Talk about kind of the grind, the day in and day out that you have to put in to actually get to that point where you.
Well, I think some of the
20 years later.
Right,
you know?
Right. Well, you know, when you're young, you got all these big dreams and stars in your eyes, right? But I think some of the best advice that my mother ever gave me, right? She was a poor lady and a single mom, but she said, "Jim, if you want to be rich, you got to live like you're poor," right? So, what that means is, those people that make some money and they've got to be surrounded by their buddies and buying all the drinks and being the man of the hour. You can do that for a while, but you'll be broke, no matter how much money you have. But when you're in a business, you've got to learn frugality. You've got to learn to be a good steward of everything you're given. You've got to have some cushion. You've got to learn how to price well. Because if all you do is work, you'll make a living. But if you learn how to price well and be a good steward of your funds, you'll then be able to make a life.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're all after. So I think when you start making some good money, don't raise your lifestyle accordingly. Mm-hmm. But start packing that away for a rainy day.
Yeah.
Start working so hard that you outwork your money.
Yeah.
And be so frugal and a good steward of your money that you can't outspend that, you'll be on your way.
That's great.
So that's one thing with young people, just don't let that extra income sway your lifestyle right away.
Yeah, start to feel that margin.
You got
rather
it.
Than continue to raise your lifestyle.
Yeah.
I love the piece that you just talked about with pricing. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I found right when I got into the industry, everybody wants to lowball.
That's right.
It's a race to the bottom. And so then it devalues our service and overall devalues the green industry.
Yeah.
Talk about how you price things and how you add value kind of from the get, and that way your pricing is not reflected upon competition.
Right.
Because what I found, like literally my first year, it's like, well, we're just price shopping.
That's right.
That's all they want to do. And if you're not, you know, you could get the business, but they're going to switch to the next person.
That's right.
And if you're selling on only that alone, you're not going to retain good clients.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, and that could be true for any business, right? Because a lot of us are just taught in school that, man, the lowest price wins, right? It's the whole world's Walmart.
Yeah.
Well, it's not. What we have to refocus on is the fact that we are solving somebody else's problem. Mm-hmm. Their problem is they need their grass mowed, they need their bushes replanted, trimmed, and everything else. We're solving that problem. So they can use a cheaper surface and get those results, or you can sell them on the fact that you're going to have the best looking place in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
I might be a little higher, but I'll be there. I'll be on time. I'll do what I say. You'll have no problems. I won't create problems for you. I'll solve them.
Yeah.
And I think when you approach people like that I have not just cut your lawn. I'm not just a guy behind a mower, but I'm a guy that solves your problem with your lawn that you don't have to touch and you can be proud of.
Yeah.
then you sell it on that, right? Yep. The results there. Yep. Now, you can't be so crazy high that people are just willing to throw money away.
Yep.
You, no matter how big their house is, they're conscientious, and most of those people in those big houses got there because they're frugal and they're good stewards of their money. Yeah, so, but you, if you give them, you show up, you're clean, you've got nice-looking equipment, mm-hmm. you don't have crap hanging off and rusty trailers and all this, and you look like you just pulled out of, you know, the inner city. These people will use you, and you know, you look at some of the big ones around town. They've gotten big, not by charging the cheapest, but by really being high priced, but delivering results.
So focus on value, professionalism up front.
You got
That's what we've done from day one. It's like you're wearing a polo, shirt tucked in, clean shaven. We haven't always had the nicest trucks, but that's because I didn't want to take any debt load.
That's right. That's
but we're now to the point where we're able to wrap trucks and branding, and they kind of see the value, and it kind of builds that rapport from the get-go.
Yeah.
So,
And all that takes time, Britt. Yeah. Out of the gate, we all have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
But you have to have that vision of where you're going to get and what you're going to do once you get to that point.
Yeah, it took, I mean, I'd walk your dog if you asked me to.
You
I'd cleaned
it.
Up garages,
too,
anything.
Man. Yeah, so. Pride doesn't pay.
Let's see here. I want to talk, so last time we met, you talked about you're strictly, there's three main points I want to touch on. You're strictly going after commercial contracts, so I want to talk about that, but also you made it seem somewhat easy, like you've had all these connections over the years.
Right.
So I want you to talk about networking and how does someone just getting started go after kind of that larger fish in the pond, so to speak?
Yeah. Well, I think, Britt, you know, my age makes a difference, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of guys get into this business, they're in their 20s, they haven't had the connections. I mean, they started out like you and I, and we don't swim in those same pools yet, right?
Yeah.
So been blessed to kind of get to that level where I'm hanging out with a lot of guys that are CEOs or C-class execs. Mm-hmm. That are decision makers in certain development companies or property management companies. So that's where those connections come from. So the value of networking, and I think you and I discussed this, is you don't ever go out there and sell, right? Nobody likes to be sold, including you and I.
Yeah.
But when you go out there and build relationships with people, then they will do business with you, and they'll be much more willing to forgive you when you screw something up.
Yeah.
So even when I ran the trucking company, I always told my people, don't sell anybody anything.
Yeah.
You build a relationship with them, and then later on you ask them, can we move your trucks?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So same
Which
thing
is
with,
reverse.
That's exactly right.
Especially for me, I was go, sell.
Yes.
I didn't care. I didn't want you to talk to me longer than 5 minutes
because
I had another sale to make.
That's right.
So how do you, is it best for people to do lower entry, lower cost in residential, and then move to commercial, or?
I think so, and I think really when these young guys are getting into it, young guys and gals, they've got to penetrate the market with, you know, price, and they got to penetrate it with equipment that's not maybe up to par because that's what they can afford. So residents, there's always problems to be taken care of there. It's really the easiest entry point.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with residents, you and I have discussed, is they can be emotional. You know, you miss a guy's little weed that you didn't trim, and he's got you on the phone yelling at you.
Yeah.
But you have to start somewhere. And if you can get there, but in your vision, in your mindset, always be trying to network and find out who are those property managers, who are these owners, who are these decision makers, and getting in front of them somehow, not forcefully, but really relationally, then that's how you'll build yourself and get yourself to the point that you'll be ready when those opportunities come.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. And one thing we've done too, because So we only do the turf management side, no mowing, landscaping. So I was forced to build relationships with subcontractors, and I gave them as much business as possible.
Yep.
In return, we started to slowly sign some of those commercial accounts and develop those relationships where we can partner on some of the big jobs. But for us, it was all residential. And you're going strictly 100% commercial is what you're trying to
do? That's our ultimate goal. And I was just with the guy that I started this other business with yesterday. And we talked about, we kind of teamed up with this other smaller guy just to kind of learn the business, really learn how to mow straight stripes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And kind of bless him and bless us and learn from him. But we've kind of got the knowledge that we need now to go ahead and train and build our side bigger. But we may have to do some resident stuff depending on how this network goes. In fact, I'm meeting with him tomorrow night. But depending on how quickly that goes, we might have to fill some of those gaps with residents because we don't want to just wait for those.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I'm running a horse race, I want to win that race, right? So it's like we're going to go all out and see where that goes tomorrow night. And if we don't have enough promised work and revenue from that,
yeah.
then we'll get into the residence. We'll do what we need to do yeah. until we can build up to where we yeah. where we're going to be. Yeah.
So that's the other thing that's really interesting to me. You said, so your goal for this company is to grow it to a point in 5 years mm-hmm. where you can sell it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's different as well than a lot of the standard for our industry.
Yeah.
Talk about what are your goals for that? How are you going to do that?
Yeah.
And you said 5 years is kind of your
yeah,
plan?
Yeah, 5 years, I mean, you have to have a goal, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, any of us that are entrepreneurs, you have to have that goal. The problem is, most of us that haven't been down that road of selling, we don't even believe it, right? Because we yeah. haven't ever experienced that.
Yeah.
I really didn't either, right?
Yeah.
I mean, again, I always started Team Driveway thinking, hey, someday I could sell it, but until I sold it, it was all blur and
exactly.
unrealistic to me.
Exactly.
But now that I've been down that road and I really see the value and the multiple that a company in that industry is willing to pay,
mm-hmm.
Then it's given me a whole new perspective of how I want to build it. And
yeah.
the reason I want to really aim towards commercial, Britt, is because that's where the multiple is paid on, because you've got yearly contracts that are renewable.
Mm-hmm.
And when you build up to a point that you've got hundreds of those,
yeah.
that's an asset that you'll sell to that next buyer,
yeah.
right? Where residents, like you said, all of a sudden someone comes along, they're $5 cheaper, you're out the door, they're
yeah.
in. So
yeah.
there's not a whole lot of value add for a buyer on residential, but there is great value for a buyer
yeah.
that has a commercial.
And the value is wrapped up in those contracts, which are what, usually 2 years?
They're usually a year. They're
a
usually
year.
A year renewable. They renew, you know, usually in December
okay.
Each year, but when you have them, and you've shown, so where 5 years comes is once we secure these commercial contracts, if I get those to renew 2, 3, 4, 5 years, now you have the stability to sell that buyer
okay.
of the value that they're buying and the risk that they're averting.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you kind of have a pretty long track record.
You got it.
Of
you
those
got
commercial
it. Yeah.
contracts.
Yeah.
What about the growth plan? So you're looking at, you've got what, 1, 2 crews right now?
Yeah, I've just really got one crew right now.
Okay.
Again, we just started this year out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a little bit of how I really didn't want to start it until 2019, but the guy that's, you know, my business partner, if you will, he was wanting to go. He wanted to quit his job, and
yeah.
he's fantastic. So, again, good people.
Yeah.
Didn't want to lose him, and he's
yeah.
he's a guy I can kind of build a business with
yeah.
and on. So we got started this year, just one crew, you know, busy 6 days a week.
Yeah.
So doing well, but it also gives us the time to collect the data and the metrics we need to go, okay, what can we make off every crew of two?
Yeah.
You know, and the expense that you make. I went out and bought all new stuff and probably got a little ahead of my skis, but
mm-hmm.
Had the cash to be able to do that.
Yeah.
But now I know that what I need and then what I can make off this crew of two, so that we know how much work we need to keep them busy, cash flow, and
yeah.
profit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Makes sense. How active, with the way you're setting the business up, how active are you right now in the daily operations?
Yeah, so, you know, I got the pleasure of actually working the business in the field the week of 4th of July when my buddy was on vacation. So,
yeah.
Even though I'm the oldest guy on the team, you know, that first day was hard on me. It was so hot in
yeah.
July, but
yeah.
that was probably my favorite week. Because
yeah.
once you get into a rhythm,
yeah.
To me, being out there on a mower in the field, man, that's kind of peaceful, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's a little bit of therapy. So, really enjoyed that week. So that was as much as I've been involved
yeah.
in the field. The rest of the time is really just the admin work, but with
yeah.
with one crew, it's not much, right?
Yeah.
So I probably spend, you know, right now an average of 5 hours
yeah.
total on the business a week, because all the work's being done in the field. The contracts were set up early
yeah.
in the year. So now that we're ramping up between tomorrow night, when I'm meeting with my commercial contact, and then into the end of the year, I'll be very busy just generating the sales, because our goal is to have 5 crews that are totally packed busy in 2019.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're going to go from 1 to 5.
That's our goal.
What?
That's a lot of
that's awesome,
transition.
Though. That's
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, we have big goals too. It took us, you know, about 6 years to get right around 1,000 clients.
Yeah.
And next year we want to go to 2,000.
Yeah.
But it's
yeah.
kind of putting all those systems in place.
That's right.
What, that's awesome. How's that going to look for you from a practical standpoint?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody at home that's listening to this is sitting there thinking, okay, he's going from one crew
yeah.
to 5.
Right.
He's not in the daily operations.
Right.
Are you going to get an admin, a virtual assistant? Does the guy that you are putting everything kind of on his shoulders?
Yeah, yeah. So he'll probably end up being the foreman, right, in the field to watch over all these crews.
That's, are all the calls going to go to him?
Yes.
Like who's
yeah.
number? What is it, Marmon Landscape?
Statement, you mean?
What? Yeah. So his number's on the side. You have an office number. Get practical with some of that.
That's right. Where, yeah. Where so he'll be handling most of those incoming calls, if you will, and all the employees,
okay,
if you will. Our goal is to have a bookkeeper that'll do all the books.
Payroll, yeah.
You know, as much as I understand payroll and QuickBooks and all that, I hate it, right? Yeah, it's like mind-numbing work. Yeah. So to have a bookkeeper that's in place. And, you know, I think probably this next year, my wife and I are doing a bunch of traveling this fall and early next spring before the mowing season starts. So yeah, I'll have that travel out of my system.
Yep.
And then this next year, I'll probably handle most of his incoming calls. But if all the contracts are set up with all this commercial stuff is what we anticipate, really the work's been done this fall.
Okay.
So if that's in place.
So it's really just service calls.
You got it. You got it. You know, service calls or, you know, we need this done or that done or this addition. So it'll be pretty light because what we're not is that one shop for everybody.
Yeah.
And if the commercial side goes well out of the gate, that'll be our main pursuit.
Yeah.
And we really, even though we've got a website and, you know, all of our email addresses, whatever, we don't plan on being just that phone operations center taking in calls from everybody. And
which is what I do right now.
Right now you do. Yeah, that's the key. You do
I'm a great admin right now.
That's right. Yeah.
What about lines of service? You're doing mowing, landscaping.
Yeah, we do.
Chem apps. Are you doing irrigation?
We you know what? We don't do a whole lot of irrigation. Okay. I'd rather farm that out. I don't want to be an expert in that.
Yeah.
I think there's good money in it, but I'd rather leave that up to the experts. If we get big enough, of course we'll take it on. But right now it's not our focus.
Yeah.
But we'll do chem apps, of course, mowing, mulch. Right in the spring, and then
insulation.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I don't want to focus on that. I think those companies, although you can make good money doing the landscape projects, it's kind of like you eat what you kill.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather have the maintenance and steady income, and we know what our cash flow is and our profitability.
Okay. I want to respect your time. Are you good on?
I'm good.
You good on time?
Yeah.
Talk about a little bit. I think people get misconceptions about lawn care. Why? A guy like you, you've got plenty of money, you're financially free, living the dream, you just sold your company for millions. Why are you, well, one, you've told me, you like being outside, you like working outside.
Mm-hmm.
What did you see?
That's probably that was my favorite week of the year, yeah.
Yeah. What did you see in the metrics for starting a lawn care company that you liked?
You know, I think for me, you know, there's money in everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think we all know that. And it was kind of like the driveway business. When I got into that, I was blessed enough to be introduced to a business that was really new. I mean, it had just started in like 1991, right?
Yeah.
I got into it in about 1990. Well, it started in 1990. I got into it in 1991. So here's this brand new industry. The bar's low. Mm-hmm. It's run by a bunch of guys that are ex-truck drivers, you know, not business-oriented. So really, I was thrust into an environment that all it took is a little bit of smarts.
Yeah.
The bar was set so low, it didn't take much to jump over, right?
Okay.
So, kind of like we've been speaking today, that also can happen in the landscape business, right? Because anybody that's got $500 and go get a mower and go to work.
Yeah. Very low entry.
You got it. So I think those guys will always make a living. You know, as long as you're willing to work and work ethic and, you know, you're a 100-hour week guy, you know that. You can make a living doing whatever. But I like to take a business where the bar's set pretty low and make it extraordinary. I mean, I see some guys around town, Ryan's and Epic and all this. Those companies have become extraordinary in a pretty low bar industry, right?
Yeah.
I would think your company, but you have made a niche for yourself that's very fantastic, that people don't leave you because you take very good care of them, right?
Yeah.
And you specialize in Chem App, and I love that. You're very specialized in that. You know your profitability, you know your numbers, your metrics. It's a great place to be. But there's a lot of guys out here that, man, all they do is they ride around, you know, retired guys or young guys or whatever, and just kind of keep it very simple. And that's good. There's so much work to go around that can happen. But I do like to take kind of a low bar industry. I'm not a tech guy. I don't have all that knowledge and smarts. But I like to take a low bar industry that's really a labor-driven industry and make it great, efficient, build a culture, and really make a business out of something that's more of a mom-and-pop operation.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You've obviously done it, so.
From the trucking.
Yeah.
Landscape.
But it's repeatable, like you said.
That's right.
It's always harder the first time.
Yeah.
The second, third, and fourth time you've been there and you kind of know the drill, so.
That's right. And you can't go into any, I mean, there's so many business success stories that you hear that guys made a bunch of money in X and they go and open a restaurant, right? Because they think they can run a restaurant.
Yeah.
Don't do that. That's your quickest way to take, you know, to make $1 million in the restaurant business. You just start with $5 million, right?
Yeah.
So don't do that, but get into something that you understand, that really the labor force, the ideas behind it, the solving that problem is pretty similar.
Yeah.
And I think apply what you know and your knowledge, and then, of course, when you have some cash to apply to it, you can make anything great.
Yeah.
And this, to me, it's fun. And when I do get the time to spin in the field, that's therapy time.
Yeah. That's where you want to be. All right. And then I also think it's interesting, back to the beginning of your story, you kind of had to take that really, really huge risk with all those credit cards. And
yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of risk. And you kind of had the experience. You knew that you could kind of bootstrap it and make it work.
I thought I could.
Yeah. You thought you could.
Yeah.
So that's a huge risk. Last time we spoke, you also talked about, though, if you don't have the money, you don't cut a check for it. You prefer to be debt free right now.
Yeah,
so is that still kind of your viewpoint, or will you take on debt service at some point?
I won't. I mean, I just don't. Even in my personal life now, if I can't write a check for it, I don't need it bad enough.
Okay.
I think it's a good way to live. And you keep yourself out of trouble, right? Now, listen, a lot of people can use leverage and do very well. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Donald Trump is a good example. Highly leveraged, made billions of dollars. I'm not willing to take that risk. I might not be the richest guy ever, but I won't be the poorest guy ever either, right? So I like to be comfortable and make sure that I'm not over my skis.
Yeah.
One point on the borrowing the money from the credit cards. I don't recommend that for everybody.
Yeah.
I was 23 years old. I was married, I had no kids, I lived in an apartment, I was worth about $7,000, right? Total, if you liquidate me and squeeze me hard. But I didn't have a choice, and I was either gonna lose my dream of what I thought I could do, or I'm gonna take that risk. And when I looked at my wife, I said, honey, here's the deal. This is a huge risk, and if this doesn't work out, we're gonna either live with your mother or mine.
Yeah.
To me, that was enough of a risk to not fail, because I didn't want to live with her mom or mine, right?
Exactly.
But I was young. And what I recommend to your audience here is, when you're young, you've got a lot of runway ahead. Yeah. You've got opportunity that if it fails, you can recover.
Yeah.
But don't put your dreams aside, wait till you're 40, and think you can live them then. Because when you have a wife, kids, cars, a house, and you are really a slave to several of the men in this world, your chances to be an entrepreneur almost out the window.
Yeah.
So if you're ambitious, do it when you're young, take the risk, suck it up, work 100-hour weeks, and you'll make it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's great advice.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your time. This has been great. And I think our audience will get a lot of value out of this.
Good.
So,
good.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
What's up? What's up? This is Britt with the Lawn Care Leaders Podcast, brought to you by Green Again Lawn. Just wanted to give you guys a heads up. Have a great episode here for you today. We'll be speaking with Jim Marmon, who has been an entrepreneur from the get. He started a business. You'll hear kind of his experience working with a company. Seemed to be doing good. Seemed to be kind of rolling along, and wasn't rewarded the way he wanted. So started that company, stuck with it for 20 years, went through a couple different transitions in his life, but eventually sold that company. And in 2015, they were doing about $25 million in top-line revenue before he sold it. So very skilled entrepreneur, been around the block, great man of faith, good conversation, and just you'll get a lot of value out of this. We touch on a few key points because he is starting a landscape company. One interesting thing that he's doing, though, is he is building a company with the intention of selling it in 5 years. So we touch on some of those things. We talk about networking since he's primarily going after commercial accounts. And then we talk about, you know, what he's doing to get that to grow in 5 years. A little bit of debt-free talk, and then just personal growth and good practical business advice. So hope you get a lot of value out of this. Looking forward to hearing your guys' feedback on Twitter, Instagram, and an all-around great podcast here. I really enjoyed this one. I've been becoming good friends with Mr. Marmon, so it's always good to see people that are kind of pouring into you and you're developing a relationship with. It's always good to see where they've been and kind of those roadblocks and hurdles that they've had to go through, because Obviously, we're right in the thick of it right now with our company. So listen in, and hope you guys find as much value from this as we did. What a great interview, right? Jim Marmon, he's a great guy. We really, really appreciated having him come on the podcast and share a little bit of his story, what he's doing on the landscape side, and just some of his personal business advice and kind of people knowledge. I mean, that's priceless. So he's doing big things, and really glad that he took time out of his day to do that for us. Hey, if you found any value remotely in this, will you subscribe to it? Share it with friends. Our goal with this is to help lawn care, landscape, hardscape, service industry professionals not only focus on what they're doing, but actually how to build a business and add value at scale. So if you're finding any value in this, please share it. Please tell your friends. Leave us a review. Comment back on Instagram. We'll post this on Instagram, Green Again Lawn. My personal account, at bdowd32 on Twitter. If you want to send me a direct email right now, that is greenagainlawn@gmail.com. We will be opening up new social platforms and emails under the Lawn Care Leaders heading. That should be coming out next week. So hope you guys are enjoying this. We've got a lot more scheduled. We've got an interview for next week scheduled with Brown Brothers. There is Eddie Brown here locally in Kansas City. Young guy, and just doing a lot of great stuff on social media. So that's going to be geared more towards social media content, what to do, how to add your following on both Instagram and Facebook platforms. He's done some YouTube work as well, but really small local company, but they're doing really big stuff on social. And so we kind of want you guys to be on the forefront of that. And we're looking to learn from them and hopefully add what they've done into our system. So again, thank you for listening in. This has been the Lawn Care Leaders Podcast. Looking forward to being back with you again next week.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.